Bad Quaker Podcast, where liberty is our mission. This is for Friday, September 27th, 2013. This is podcast number 349, and my name is Ben Stone. Quick announcement, Bitcoin Not Bombs needs your help to hoodie the homeless. Mass Appeal, Inc. has offered us a great deal on 324 discounted orange hoodies that will be distributed to the homeless in San Francisco. We have until the end of October to raise the 47 Bitcoin needed to reach our goal, and we're calling on the Bitcoin community to help make this happen. You can pledge contributions to the Bitcoin Starter Campaign, purchase a Bitcoin Not Bombs t-shirt, or donate to Bitcoin Not Bombs directly. Every t-shirt sold is priced to pay for one hoodie to keep someone warm this winter. Go to BitcoinNotBombs.com and help us hoodie the homeless. A quick disclaimer for today's show. Most of the Bad Quaker podcasts are family-friendly. You might want to consider pre-screening today's podcast. It's not quite as family-friendly as normal. Also, there's a good possibility on the Bad Quaker website, once we publish this podcast and the article that will go with it, there's a good possibility that we will get a lot of negative feedback. There are some statements against law enforcement in this podcast, and there tends to be on the internet massive waves of hate-filled, vulgarity-filled posts anywhere like on Facebook or YouTube or CopBlock or anywhere like that where somebody says anything negative about law enforcement. There generally is waves and waves of fanatical hate and vulgarities thrown at whoever says it. If that happens at badquaker.com, once we publish this article, the admins will scrub all of those hate-filled comments. We have no toleration for that kind of nonsense. If you can't be an adult, you don't need to post at badquaker.com. Okay, now, also, the other thing that I wanted to mention is that today's podcast may seem a little stiff. Because of the importance of the topic, I'm reading directly from my notes, which will be published as the article at badquaker.com. So we're not going to have, I'm not going to allow myself to ramble or go off in any direction. I'm going to stay strictly with reading my notes. Today's podcast is not about war. At first, I'll begin talking about war because it's the easiest way to show that the U.S. government, its puppet court historians, and its public school teachers, along with the mainstream media and Hollywood propaganda artists, have systematically and for the most part intentionally lied about American involvement in its wars, and that these lies have led American families to sacrifice their sons, their fathers, their husbands, and now their sisters, their wives, and their mothers into the fires of unnecessary war. But the greater point I want to get you to see today is that since 1788, the American people have been in voluntary servitude to a criminal gang. They have allowed themselves to be fooled by a gang of murderous thieves called the U.S. government. And I'm here to tell you that the story doesn't have to end like this. I'm here to tell you that this servitude can end. I'm here to tell you that I believe this servitude will end. U.S. government court historians call the War of 1812 the, quote, Second War of Independence, and they claim that the U.S. government won that war. The excuses for war given to the American people were that, one, Britain was kidnapping Americans and pressing them into service in the British Navy, that, two, Britain was enforcing its trade restrictions against Americans trading with France, and that, three, Britain was arming and supporting the American Indian Confederations in the old Northwest Territory, which were hostile to the American states. These are almost entirely lies. The War of 1812 was a war of aggression committed by the U.S. government upon the British government for the purpose of the U.S. annexing Canada and exterminating the native inhabitants of present-day Ohio, Indiana, Michigan, Illinois, Missouri, Iowa, and Wisconsin. Had the war been successful for the U.S., it would have quadrupled the size of the U.S. and expelled Britain from the mainland of North America. The war was successful for the U.S. government in the sense that Britain was unable or unwilling to assist the American natives, and the U.S. forces crushed the Indian Confederacy, conquering and acquiring the old Northwest Territory. This more than doubled the size of the U.S. The war was unsuccessful for the U.S. in the sense that Britain entirely dominated the sea, and Canadian volunteers under British command dominated the land war until the U.S. was forced to sign the Treaty of Ghent, which didn't address a single official reason for the U.S. committing the acts of war. The truth about those reasons mentioned above, 1. In the individual cases that the media used to outrage Americans and drive them to war, the British were not kidnapping Americans. They had stopped a number of American merchant ships that carried British war deserters, arrested, tried, and either released or hung those arrested according to the results of their trials. On occasion, the British would fire on ships suspected of carrying British deserters if those ships refused to stop for the inspection. This can be compared to the U.S. government's current attempts to force other countries to turn over dissidents like Edward Snowden, or you can rightfully compare it to the current U.S. policy of drone strikes on Americans accused but never charged nor convicted of crimes against the state. 2. British continued enforcing the trade restrictions against Americans trading with France since Britain was at war with France and the U.S. government and many U.S. merchants were actively supplying the Napoleonic government with critical war supplies. This is no different than what the U.S. is doing in Iran today and what it did with Cuba in the 1960s. 3. Britain was not arming and supporting the American Indian Confederations in the old Northwest Territory. Private Canadian merchants peaceably traded with Indians. It's hypocritical to denounce Britain for restricting U.S. merchants supplying the French, while the U.S. was attempting to restrict Canadian merchants from trading with the Indian Confederacy. The U.S. government, with the assistance of the U.S. media, lied to get into the war, committed itself to a war of aggression by invading Canada, then agreed to end the war without winning a single concession to its original complaints. After the War of 1812, hardened war veterans were used to commit ethnic cleansing and further atrocities against American Indians, including those who had assisted the U.S. during the war. Since that time, government puppet historians, propagandists, and schoolteachers have systematically lied to the American people about this war and its aftermath. I could lay out this same situation for the American War of Aggression against Mexico, where the U.S. government used a false flag incident and lied to get into the war, then stole the northern half of Mexico's territory. Following this war of aggression against Mexico, hardened war veterans were used to commit ethnic cleansing and further atrocities against the Southwest American Indians, including those who had assisted the U.S. during that war. I could say the same things about Lincoln and his deception to enter and prosecute the so-called Civil War and the aftermath, where hardened war veterans were used to commit ethnic cleansing and further atrocities against the American Indians of the Great Plains and the Dakotas. The exact same process was used to attack Spain and strip the Spanish government of its island possessions, and the aftermath, where hardened U.S. war veterans were used to commit ethnic cleansing and further atrocities against the natives of the Philippines. The American people were openly, repeatedly, and blatantly lied to in the justification to enter World War I, World War II, the Korean conflict, and Vietnam, where the lies supporting the Gulf of Tonkin incident were not admitted to by the U.S. government until 2005, 30 years after the humiliation of the fall of Saigon. The true stories of the assassinations of John F. Kennedy, Malcolm X, Martin Luther King Jr., Bobby Kennedy, and the attempted assassinations of Alabama's governor, George Wallace, and the newly elected Ronald Reagan may never be known. Lifetime CIA man George Herbert Walker Bush was present and on duty in Dallas on that fateful afternoon in November 1963, and it just so happens that John Hinckley, the accused shooter of Reagan, had close family ties with the Bush family, even to the point that Hinckley's brother had dinner with the Bush family the night before the shooting. Coincidences like these should at least be part of the conversation. But sadly, Americans sit in ignorance of their own history, even the history that takes place during their own lifetimes. This is the real story of the history of America and the murderous crime gang that has controlled the U.S. government in an unbroken chain since 1788. It's my job today to tell you the news. It doesn't have to be this way. This chain can and will be broken. And not just in America. Governments around the world are nothing more than the most powerful crime gang in their region. These criminals want us to believe that they are our parents. They want us to believe that we are children incapable of taking care of ourselves. They want to tell us where we can and can't travel, who we can associate with, what we can and can't ingest, what we can and can't own, and how we can and can't interact with our fellow humans. Governments are not our parents. They are our kidnappers who have invaded our home and taken us captive. They ransack our home and take or destroy whatever they want. And then, when they leave something for us, they expect us to be grateful. They single out a whipping boy and beat him in front of us. Then they stroke our cheek and tell us they did it for our good, and they would never do that to us. They rape us at will, in their airports, on their streets, and in their jail cells. And then they tell us they do it because they love us. They tell us they rape us for our own good. They rape us because they say some of us are bad, so they have to punish all of us. They don't want to shock us with tasers. They don't want to spray us with pepper spray. They beat us because they love us. They beat us to serve us. And so, the societal Stockholm Syndrome continues another generation. But it doesn't have to continue. We can stop it by recognizing their methods and pointing them out to others, by teaching our children, and by enlightening our friends, our co-workers, and our neighbors. We can stop this 9,000-year-long home invasion by simply opening our eyes, rising to our feet, and rejecting our servitude. Governments are not our parents. Governments are home invaders. They are bloated with loot, and they are drunken with power. And recognizing the truth of our circumstances and the lies that they rely on to continue this captivity are the first step in taking back our homes. When I get back from the break, I'll continue this article.
Do you have an Amazon account? If you don't, let me encourage you to set one up. Setting up an account is free and it's easy. Amazon has great prices, and in most cases, you can avoid paying sales tax. Plus, if you're careful and lump your purchases together, you can even get free shipping. And Amazon has almost anything you can think of. Plus, it's safer and cheaper than driving all over town. When you buy stuff, if you follow the Amazon link at badquaker.com, Amazon will give badquaker.com a tiny portion of the purchase price. It won't cost you any extra, but you will be supporting this podcast. Thank you.
Energy, vitality, clarity of mind, and incredible immune support. The awesome power of nature is now in your hands. Hi, this is Sean from One with Nature. Our herbal formulas contain some of the greatest botanicals from around the world, and they are ready and willing to help you achieve your goals. Visit us at onewithnature.com. That's W-O-N, withnature.com.
What's better than silver? Free silver, of course, which is what you'll get by partaking in Sons of Liberty Mint's weekly silver giveaways. It's fun, it's easy, and it's your chance to win 4 fine silver quarters. That's 1 ounce of .999 fine silver from Sons of Liberty Mint. All you have to do is guess the close of spot price each week for your chance to win. Visit sonsoflibertymint.com/contest for more details. That's S-U-N-S, sonsoflibertymint.com.
Need to talk to people in a secure manner? Liberty Private Network sells phones that will work over any good internet connection and give you military-grade encryption for calls that cannot be tapped. Great for lawyers and clients, business people with trade secrets, or just ordinary folk who don't want their love talk spied on by some scumbag from the central scrutinizer. Call 516-TLK-SAFE on your non-secure phone and tell them the Freedom Fiends sent you. That's 516-TLK-SAFE.
Thanks for staying with me through the break. And back to our article for today. My wife and I walk our dog around our neighborhood. As we do so, we often see a sheriff's car parked in front of the same house. A deputy lives there. On the side of the sheriff's car is a large sticker that proclaims, quote, "First to serve since 1788. My wife hates it when we see that car with its ridiculous sticker, because she knows the likelihood that I'll spend the next 20 minutes loudly denouncing the lies that bind us and the liars who push those lies down our throats on a daily basis. First to serve since 1788 is the motto on Ohio sheriff's vehicles, referring to Ebenezer Sprout. Ebenezer Sprout was a shareholder of the Ohio Company of Associates and served the company as a surveyor. In 1788, Sprout was one of 48 employees and shareholders of the Ohio Company that crossed the Ohio River and established the town of Marietta on the southeastern edge of Ohio. Marietta is considered by court historians and government stooges to be the first permanent town in Ohio. The Ohio Company had paid the sum of some 500,000 government securities, then worth about 12 cents specie to the dollar, as a down payment, with an additional 200,000 government securities remaining outstanding, to the Continental Congress for 913,833 acres in eastern Ohio. After the coup that produced the U.S. federal government, that 700,000 in securities was worth about $84,000, meaning the Ohio Company purchased about 1 million acres of occupied Indian land from the Continental Congress that had no right to sell it, and did so at a rate of $11.90 per acre. This land purchase was based on the Northwest Ordinance, but that document remained unsigned and didn't become a law until 1789. Court historians consider this the, quote, first government in Ohio, and consider Sprout to be the, quote, first sheriff in Ohio. Keeping in mind, Marietta was a company town on company land for the purpose of making a profit through the sales of land, and Ebenezer Sprout was a shareholder in that company. Sheriffs are traditionally either appointed by a county, a township, or a parish judge, or they are duly elected by the citizenry of a county, township, or a parish. I have found no evidence of an election of any kind, nor any appointment by any judge in regards to the town of Marietta of the Ohio Company in 1788, much less an election where Ebenezer Sprout won the position of sheriff. a private company can have private security, but can we call an officer of a company sheriff using only the authority of that company? I propose to you today that Ebenezer Sprout, or Colonel Sprout as he insisted to be called, was a self-appointed sheriff who, many years after he was out of the army, liked to strut around in his colonial army uniform telling tales of his glory days while lording over his little company-based fiefdom. By 1803, when actual government took control of Ohio, Sprout was deposed and died 2 years later at the age of only 53. Now for some interesting facts. Ebenezer Sprout was a colonel under Washington during the War of Independence. There is considerable evidence that in March 1783, Sprout was present at the unofficial forming of the Society of the Cincinnati in Washington's headquarters, along with Henry Knox, Alexander Hamilton, Rufus Putman, also of the Ohio Company, Benjamin Tupper, also of the Ohio Company, Winthrop Sargent, also of the Ohio Company, and James Mitchell Varnum, also of the Ohio Company. So what does the Society of the Cincinnati have to do with a self-appointed sheriff who liked to ride around in his horse, sicking his hounds on whoever questioned his authority? Well, let's review the mutiny of 1783 and its roots with Knox in 1782. Henry Knox wrote and sent a warning letter to Congress, signed by a number of Washington's top officers, in which he stated, and I quote, "I consider the reputation of the American army as one of the most immaculate things on earth, and that we should even suffer wrongs and injuries to the utmost verge of toleration rather than sully it in the least degree. But there is a point beyond which is no sufferance. I pray we will sincerely not pass it." In this proper vernacular of the day, there was an open and clear threat of mutiny by the officers of the Continental Army against the Continental Congress. The issue at hand was pay. When rumors of mutiny in the higher ranks circulated in March of 1783, Washington held a meeting of his officers in which he made an impassioned plea for restraint. He assured his officers that a plan existed that would satisfy all their concerns. In that meeting, Knox introduced motions reaffirming the officers' allegiance to Washington, helping to defuse the crisis. The officers literally swore absolute allegiance to Washington. This was the unofficial forming of the Society of the Cincinnati. Without the support of the officers, the mutiny ended up with several thousand soldiers running amok, several hundred of those invading Philadelphia, forcing Congress to flee for their lives. Washington's men stayed loyal, as did his officers. In staying loyal to Washington, they betrayed the soldiers who expected and depended upon their support. The mutiny of 1783 failed. Later, when Washington, Hamilton, and the other members of the Society of the Cincinnati accomplished the coup that replaced the Confederate government with their own federal government, Sprout and his cronies were setting up the other half of the plan on the banks of the Ohio River. Eventually, Ohio and the rest of the old Northwest Territory would fall into the hands of the U.S. government, concluding with the War of 1812 and the defeat of the Indian Confederacies. Washington had wanted this, had dreamed of this, had wrote of this all the way back in the 1760s, before the War of Independence. Sprout was married to Catherine Whipple, daughter of Abraham Whipple, a close confidant of Washington and also a member of the Society of the Cincinnati. Sprout demanded to be referred to as Colonel Sprout. Publicly, he always presented himself in uniform, even into his old age. His native Indian contemporaries called him Hetuck, meaning Eye of a Buck. it's likely they didn't mean that as a compliment. You see, a buck is a large, proud animal that struts around displaying his rack for all to see. He's driven by the desire to dominate his fellow males, while possessing an almost maddening urge to procreate with every female he sees. In the wild, a buck is not considered the brightest of animals, especially during the seasonal rut when all he wants to do is fight and mate. Sprout was a big man, and in his uniform with his tall-heeled black boots, he would have struck a commanding presence. It's quite plausible that Ohio is called the Buckeye State today because of Sprout. William Henry Harrison, a man who knew as much about the history of Ohio as anyone in his day, may have attempted to distract attention from Sprout by linking Ohio to the Buckeye Tree. Consider the Buckeye Tree, common from Alabama in the south to Canada in the north and from Pennsylvania in the east to the Rio Grande in Texas. Why is it connected to Ohio any more than anywhere else? Harrison, like a lot of people in Ohio, had known Sprout. During the presidential election of 1840, long after the death of Sprout, Ohio was bitterly divided between Harrison and Van Buren. For some reason, it became important to associate Ohio with the tree and disassociate Ohio from the tyrant Sprout. I believe this to be an act of propaganda on the part of the Whigs and William Henry Harrison. From 1788 until actual government took over in 1803, Ebenezer Sprout was a combination of Judge Roy Bean and John Gotti dominating a million acres in southeastern Ohio. With two or three of his big, mean hounds, he would ride the countryside collecting land payments and protection fees from farmers. The poor farmers would pay the fees or face the wrath of Sprout and his enforcers. According to legend, punishment for not paying your fees could be light or harsh. You might get slapped around, or you might get your cabin burned. Or, according to legend, the big Buckeye might insist on settling your fees in your cabin with your wife while you stood outside holding his horse. Either way, you likely didn't have much of a choice. Ohio was Big Buckeye's country. In 1805, Ebenezer Sprout died, but the legend of the big Buckeye and his country lingered. William Henry Harrison and the Whigs buried the bad aspects of the legend in the roots of the Buckeye Tree in 1840, and court historians and government apologists have spent the last 200 years recreating the story to enhance the legitimacy of the Ohio Sheriff's Departments. Today, in the tradition of Ebenezer Sprout, the Buckeye, Ohio sheriffs are here to serve you until it hurts. On September 24th, 2013, Ohio Sheriff's Deputy Michael Moore was found guilty of two counts of murder. On September 19th, 2013, Ohio Sheriff's Deputy Randy N. Spencer was found guilty of four counts of raping a five-year-old girl. On August 2nd, 2013, Ohio Sheriff's Deputy Todd Germain was sentenced to 4 years in prison for possessing child pornography. And on July 29th, 2013, Ohio Sheriff's Deputy Michael Esposito was found guilty of stealing drugs from the Hamilton County Sheriff's Department property room. The above four cases are simply a snapshot of time in one place called Ohio. There is nothing unusual about the last 3 months, and there is nothing unusual about Ohio. These things are happening all the time, all around the world. Back in 2012, two Ohio sheriff's deputies and an Ohio state trooper picked up a highly intoxicated man. The man was a Spanish-speaking gentleman. After making fun of the man's ethnicity, which was caught on dash cameras, and rather than dealing with the hassle and the paperwork involved in arresting him, They dumped him outside a Taco Bell where they said they expected someone would be able to understand him. Think about that for a minute. The drunken man, having no idea where the cops had dumped him, wandered into the street and was struck and killed by traffic. First to serve since 1788. Governments don't serve. Governments steal, maim, kill, destroy, and dominate. Then they lie to you and tell you that they do it to serve you. They do it because they love you. They do it because you need them. They do it because you can't get by without them. But each time a new set of eyes opens and sees government for what it is, sees government as the home invader, not the benevolent parent, we come one step closer to the end of government. Governments exist today because people believe they need them. There's a market demand for governments. For those of us who believe in the power of markets to solve the problems of humanity, the market can solve the problem of governments. All we have to do is expose governments for what they are, and the market will demand something better. And anarcho-capitalists have something better to offer the market. Governments claim they serve us when, in fact, we are in servitude to them. I'm here to tell you that I believe this servitude will end. I believe people will choose freedom and reject service from and to government. I believe this is not just happening in America. I believe freedom is a universal human desire, and I believe the fires of freedom can burn away the chains of government everywhere. Government fires of war burn humanity and destroy wealth, but the fires of freedom destroy the desire for government and ignite markets to create wealth. Folks, thanks for listening to today's podcast, and remember to visit badquaker.com, where liberty is our mission. And if you are so inclined, copy and paste the above article from badquaker.com anywhere that you'd like to. As I say on the article itself, permission to reprint, copy, alter, claim credit for, or outright steal is gladly given, because IP law is an imaginary concept made up by statists. Thanks a lot, folks.